M17, number 2A.
There are always these exceptional people that somehow from birth on have somehow the spirit of healing, the spirit of helping. They are what they then call natural Christian Scientists. They are not natural, but they are called that way, natural Christians, because they have it out of their own nature. And they can help and they can heal, but you will always see they can never unfold the idea because they don't know their letter. And therefore it stays with them at the same level, and little by little the spirit fades away. I remember, I don't know, that's just one example out of many, but it made a great impression on me. When I was a young student before the war, I stayed with, how do you say in English when you have a room, boarding, huh? I boarded with a wonderful, white-haired, beautiful-looking, red-cheeked practitioner. Beautiful woman. And she was practicing at that time already for about 40 years or so. One of those early, sturdy practitioners around about the turning of the century. And I was boarding with her, and she knew that I was studying the synonyms and was studying madly away with the synonyms and so on. I was a greenhorn in Christian Science. And from time to time she would ask me for a nice cup of tea in her nice sitting room. And practically every time the same story came up. She said, "Max, when I came into Christian Science 35, 40 years ago, I just could heal that day. Whatever came along, I just could heal it like that. Today, I can't anymore. It's hard now." Can you see, she was a natural Christian Scientist, what is called that way. She had the spirit of Christian Science, she had the spirit of love for mankind, which was nothing more than actually a religious sense of love. And with that, at that time when Christian Science was new and everybody was expecting wonders and miracles from Christian Science, she could heal, and little by little as time went on, those healing were getting more strenuous, harder. And she also would come up and say, "What can I do?" And she began to see that she needed science, that her sense of the spirit needed to be wedded to the letter, and that she was madly trying to get the letter, but it was a bit too late for her. But that is typical. This is one example. You can cite another 1,000 examples. I came along many, many of them, and it's the long cry of the practitioners. In earlier times, healing was so much easier than it is now, because at that earlier time, it needed only the spirit and not the letter. Today, in a world where evil is organized scientifically, and intentionally, we need more than just the tender sense of love for mankind. We need to know reality. We need to know absolute reality and spiritual reality, and must have a conscious consciousness of what constitutes reality, and that consciousness must be our consciousness. Well, let's go on. And just talking about the importance of wedding the letter with the spirit. Now, everybody says that you have to wed the letter with the spirit and you can't get along without both. But they ask, how do I get the spirit? I mean, just to say you have to have the spirit, that's very nice, but how do you get it? So, again, we have that method where we can see that there is a method in order to go on from our findings of the ideas characterizing the seven synonymous term, to go on from there to get the spirit of it. How? Well, we have to culture what we call the tonality of the seven synonymous terms. What do we mean by tone and tonality of the synonymous terms? That's something that John Dolley has introduced and used quite often, that term tone. What do we mean by it? By that tone we really mean the spirit of it. How do we get it? Well, we go out from our findings of what constitutes each synonymous term through the list of ideas that you have analyzed from the textbook. Then you take that list of ideas and say, now what does it mean? What have I found? And you begin to ponder what each of these ideas of a synonymous term mean. You have the synonymous term mind, and the ideas characterizing mind as the creator. Mind is the creator. Mind is cause. Mind is the first. Mind is the producer. Then you see that mind is the creative intelligence, that mind is intelligence, that mind guides and leads and molds and forms, and you begin to think about what that means. What does it mean that mind is the creator and not matter the creator? That mind is the creator and not people are the creator? What does it mean that mind is the creator, not brain is creative? What does it mean that mind is the creator, and that mind's intelligence is the creator, and not that an intelligent brain is creative? What does that mean? And you begin to ponder that. By pondering, what do? You really begin to get the touch, the feel, the warmth, the roundness, the meaning, the implications of these terms, what they really mean. And in that way, you begin to ponder these ideas, and little by little, therefore, in doing this, you get the feel of it, which is then no more a term, you get the feel, an atmosphere. That's what we call the tone of mind. And actually, as you go on and go through all those ideas of mind and elaborate it and begin to see how these ideas interlock. By the way, if you don't understand one or the other term, you just make like this. I try to put it in other terms. Don't be shy. Huh? We like that we understand each other. By the way, do you understand me, my English?
Okay.
Yes. Perhaps better than the English, huh? Because I German accent. Huh?
German.
Yeah. All right. So, can you see in this way you begin to think about them. You see, you don't pour over a book and say, what is mind on the list? You sit back. You sit back and you contemplate, you ponder, you You stand in awe before what it means. You see the implication of what it means. And you can see very easily that it begins to separate within your consciousness that which is true from that which is wrong. Because only through the comparison what it is not, you begin to feel much stronger what it is. As I said, if you see mind, capital M, God, mind is the creator. That one says anything else is not the creator. Matter is not the creator, my brain is not the creator, I am not the creator, my parents are not the creator, I cannot create, only mind can create. And if you begin to see that creator is the cause of everything, that begins to be causative for everything, that begins to create in the universe as a causative power everything, and so you begin to feel, then there is no cause in matter. There is no material causality. That material causality is not real. It's not of the nature of reality. Only mind is cause. Only mind can cause anything. And you at once feel, then mortal thinking cannot cause anything. Other people's thought cannot cause anything. They are not the cause. Can you see what the world opens up that corrects mistaken views at once on every one of these ideas? And as we go on and go all through the many, many ideas of mind and interlock them and see that we cannot have a creator without being a cause, because that's in the nature of creator, that it is causative. That if it is a cause, it is a producer. It does bring forth something. It produces something. And it interlocks with seeing that this cause, because its mind is intelligent. Therefore, you only have one causative intelligence, no more any material intelligence, any material causative intelligence. You feel a whole new world is building up within your consciousness, and you get the sense of a feel about it. And the more you take these many, many dozens of an idea on the mind, you lose the concept of each term. You lose the concept, what did I think? Oh, cause, creator, power, causative, intelligence, guiding, so you lose these terms. And what stays with you afterwards is just a tone, an atmosphere, an impact, a feel, but it's a definite feel naturally. It's no more a sentimental, emotional feeling, but it's a true feeling, a scientific feel. Perhaps it's much better to say a feel than a feeling. And in this way you get the spirit of it. See? This gives the atmosphere of it. And little by little the tone or the tonality is showing the wedding of the letter with the spirit. So this is the culturing of it. Therefore, can you see that your study isn't just poring over a book or poring over a list of anything, of terms. That's the step one. But the second step is that you sit back and look into the immensity of those synonymous terms and think out what they mean through the ideas, what they mean through the ideas. Now this is then very different from what I was telling earlier this morning. Namely, then this is no more a humanly subjective feeling or subjective view of the synonymous term. So if you go, perhaps I have to repeat that, if you go and say to any Christian scientist, now tell me, what do you think is spirit? And they say, well, spirit, and then she said, tells you quite a few things. But that's her concept of spirit. Huh? It's therefore her humanly subjective concept of spirit. Now, the method we use is different. We say, I don't care what I think spirit is. I go to the books and let the book tell me what spirit is through ideas. And as I take these, then they are divinely objective. That's what God has told. So they are objective, they are not humanly subjective, they are divinely objective. But when I begin to ponder them and think about them in the quietude of the evenings, then they begin to be subjective to me. But they are no more humanly subjective, they are divinely subjective then to me. Yes? That's a big difference, huh? So, you see again people who say, well, all that matters is the spirit. Yeah, it's nice to have the spirit. But is that spirit a humanly subjective spirit? Or is it a divinely objective spirit? That's the difference. And so, in this way, I can make that which is divinely objective and therefore divinely scientific, factual, I can make it subjective, but then it is divinely subjective. It's not more humanly subjective. And then I have the tonality of reality. Yes? So at that point, we see, then we get the tone. Now that tone does not need to be anymore be defined through human concepts like terms. It's one impression, huh? Mind. Huh? And you talk about mind, a whole world opens up and you hear in this one term, this one synonymous term, you hear a whole world of many, 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 many ideas being embedded in it as one. Huh? And no more as separate little concepts and terms. And that is what we have to do. That's our prayer. That's our prayerful attitude to go over them until they become tone. And when they are tone, now this is important. Here comes now a very important point. When they become tone, they become independent on terms, on words. Is that clear? They become independent. You have a tone, huh? You hear mind. And that is an impact, an impression. It's a tone. Now, at this point, we have got more or less our tools. This is not the purpose of our study. It's still the preparation. It's still getting our tools right. It is as if a carpenter would have now got all his right tools, proper tools. And now he says, now I have all my proper tools. I know now all this. Now my vocabulary is not good enough in English, what they are, huh? All these various tools, but they are all nicely adapted for his job. But they are still tools. He hasn't done anything with it. Now he has to use them. Say, for what purpose have we now got the tones of the singing? And the purpose of it are two and threefold, essentially. But one is, and that's the important point, one is that now you can actually, for the first time, read the Bible and the textbook properly. Why? What do I mean with it? Let's take the Bible. You read the Bible, and you read any story of the Bible. We have taken many of the stories, like Samuel, we have taken one class, the whole book of Samuel, or you can take the whole book of a prophet. And you read the Bible, and the Bible is written in words, and you read the words. But the words are the letter. They are not the tones. The words are there as symbols trying to convey the tone of the story. Therefore, we read the Bible, and once we have got the seven synonymous term tone-wise, we read the Bible in a completely different way than anybody else on this earth. Everybody who reads the Bible, if they read it as terms, even if they interpret then what they read in their own way, perhaps in a very nice way, in a very uplifting way, in a very helpful way, nothing to be said against that, they still read the words. When we read the Bible, we read not the words in it, we read the tones that are conveyed through the words.
Convey
gives the impression, gives the meaning of, that's convey, yes. You see, therefore, when we read, say, a prophet, who prophesies something, nobody really knows what he's prophesying, but he's prophesying all sorts of things, about the locusts that are coming, or that God comes down and treads on the hills and so on, melt away and so on. They read words, and perhaps they make a picture of the words, but it's still a human material picture. We read tones. We read those words as conveying, as giving the meaning of a tone of a synonym. Therefore, when we read, say, Hosea or so, we read, oh, mind, mind, oh yes, spirit, spirit, oh yes, soul, soul, oh yes, principle, life, truth, love, that's the end of it. Can you see? I told you I never know any sentence by heart, but if it sounds like this, that the prophet says, and the Lord will come down from the mountain, and he will tread on the hills, and he treads down the hills, and the hills melt before he is treading down like wax before the fire. Can you see what the theologian does? He makes a picture, some fantasy picture of a Lord coming down, treading down the hills and treading them flat like a tank, just putting right flat, and everything just is put flat. When we read it, we hear the divine mind, as mind, as the power of mind, comes down like the Christ power. And that Christ power
has within itself the power that it overcomes every obstacle, that nothing can resist the Christ power, the mind of Christ, and everything falls right flat before the Christ power. Can you hear? I hear mind power. Mind power that cannot be resisted by any lesser power, by the hills, by mortal mind power, by human thinking. I hear mind. I don't hear the footsteps of the Lord Almighty, treading down. Do you see? Now, you can say, but is that what the prophets really meant? And you can ask now, go back right to the source and say, what did the prophets teach? Did they teach about mountains and hills and candles and wax before the fire and so on? Did they teach that? Or did they teach God? Did they teach reality? If they were teaching reality, if they were teaching God, they couldn't teach anything else but the nature of God. And the nature of God at that time was the same nature as today. It was the nature of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And they wanted to teach that nature of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love in the many aspects. They in the aspect of the Christ power, like in the prophets. Then they had to find somehow symbols, terms, words that would convey somehow something approximating this tone. So they were telling these stories that don't even make sense humanly. Nobody has ever seen those steps and footsteps of the Lord Almighty coming down on the hills and treading it down. But that is the way they tried to use language that was known at that time, very primitive time, where they didn't have any absolute abstract symbols, really those terms which approximated as nearly as possible the tone of mind. Now, what we therefore have to, or let's put it the other way, what they had to do is to take that concept of mind and translate it into human symbols. And we come along and have to do the retranslating and say, we translate these human symbols back to where they came from, namely to the tone of mind and spirit and soul, principle, life, truth and love, or to the tone of word or Christ or Christianity or science. That's what we have to do. So that we can see, we read the Bible no more with the dictionary language of English, but with the tonality language of the Spirit. We don't read any more concepts, but tones. We translate at once back into its original language. And in this way, John Dory has shown us that you can take the whole Bible, and every time you take up a book of the Bible will, or a book of the Bible, will tell us a situation and show how that situation, through those categories of being which we know, has been symbolized. But what is the most important thing? The symbol or the original language? Naturally, the original language, not the symbol.